Hey, welcome back to the Intuitive Mindset Podcast with Jeannie Lynch, and this is Season 5 and Episode 1. So right out of the gate, Happy New Year. I'm so glad that you're here. And I'm so glad that you're listening to today's topic because it is an important one. It is one that we will absolutely all face. You have no choice. This is going to happen to you or certainly to someone you know and love in your life. And we're talking about this word doula. All right, so right now you're thinking, oh, a doula, I've heard that. That has to do with babies coming in and the person who assists them as they transition into pregnancy, right? Well, stay listening because that's not what we're talking about today when we're talking about our topic of a death doula. A death doula helps somebody transition the other way, not in, but out. Curious what their job is? How do they assist their clients? What is their role? It is a topic today, so please stay listening. That very important, informative podcast. It's coming up next. Hey, welcome back to my channel, Jeannie Lynch. So happy that you're here today and so honored to be talking about my next topic and bringing on my next guest for this interview. Today, we're going to be interviewing a death doula. Okay, so I've already lost your attention. You're ready to click out because this is too grim of a topic for you, or maybe you're like me years ago and you're terrified of death and you just can't go there as a topic. Well, I encourage you to absolutely stay listening because that's not what we're talking about today. When you hear the word doula, birth doula, right? Immediately, I'm sure you think of a beautiful baby coming in, and a birth doula is somebody who helps the mother transition that beautiful child into the physical, right? Isn't that beautiful? Education, communication, helping that and assisting that person, whatever they need. Well, guess what? A death doula does the same thing, but helping the person transition out. And don't just think that it's all about the person who's transitioning. It's absolutely about everybody in the room too, the family, the loved ones, the nurses, everybody, right? Because we're all going through that transition together when the baby comes in or when the person goes out, regardless of age, right? So today we're going to be talking about that and we're going to be learning all about when is the right time? What do they actually do? How do they assist people? Why is it so important? When is it so important, right? And I can't wait to explore this topic with you. So as somebody who helps people through grief, this is a topic that is near and dear to me. So I invited this person in to share her knowledge, and I'm going to share that with you. So stay listening, stay watching. That beautiful interview is coming up next. Hey, welcome everybody. So excited for my guest. I just did a beautiful little intro for you explaining what today's layup is. And I'm so excited for our topic. And you know, when you reached out to me and you said this is something that is passionate to you, I thought I had met a kindred soul. And then on the phone, we started to find out that we had more in common than we did not, right? So today we'll share with the audience some of those beautiful connections that we have as souls. So today, as you know, I was really focused on sharing your beautiful modality. I'm going to call it a spiritual modality because it fits so nicely in a playlist I have. But I don't want people thinking that it's all about the end of the life from the spiritual standpoint. We're talking about a death doula, and we're talking about assisting people at the end of their life as they transition. And that can mean so many things to different people. So for you, what I would love to do for my audience is share everything about you, who you are, how you got into this, and a little bit about the door opening for others who might not know this word. In fact, they're afraid of this word, death doula. So Judy, I'll let you give your full name and tell us how you came to be and where you are.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me. And yes, my name is Judy Bram. I live in Venice, Florida with my husband, Mike, and our two cats, Mikey and Muggsy. We have two beautiful and accomplished adult daughters. I have two adorable granddaughters. I work part-time in a crystal store, and I am an end-of-life doula, as you mentioned.
Okay. We did look for your crystal store the other day, so I do know it's on 41, and I was excited to go check that out. So that's always good to know for my Florida peeps. We'll put that tag in here and talk more about that. So yay. So the death doula, you know, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Were you doing crystals and then got into this, or did something happen in your life that opened up the door to this beautiful work?
Well, I will tell you that I believe I was a end-of-life doula before I even knew what one was. Back in 2006, I was present with my mother when she died. I was holding her hand. And then in 2013, I was present when my youngest daughter's father died while on hospice at home. So I have been there as both the person who was losing their loved one and the person supporting someone who is losing a loved one. And when I would tell people about this afterwards, and when I would talk about it, I would always say what an honor it was to be there for someone in their final moments. And I would get a lot of strange looks. I would have people actually like shudder, put their hands up and say things like, I don't know how you could do that. And I started to feel like I was weird, like maybe there was something wrong with the way that I was viewing it. So fast forward to the pandemic, and during the time at home with not much to do, I saw an article online that said that Elvis Presley's granddaughter had become a death doula. So that was like clickbait for me, because I thought, what in the world is a death doula? That sounds really creepy. And I had never heard of it. So I clicked on the article and read about it. And it was just this epiphany that this is something I've done. This is something I'm supposed to be doing. And so I started researching, and thanks to the pandemic, everything was available online. You used to have to travel to wherever the trainings were, whether it was California or Texas. And now training was available on Zoom. So I found a program and I completed it in 6 months. And that was about 2 years ago.
So let's go to that, because there's so much in what you just said, and I'm sure my audience has the same questions that are coming to my mind. I think of so many people assisting people as they cross over, right? And years ago when hospice, right? You can, is it time for hospice? And then the hospice respite houses started to pop up in these beautiful areas, the right to die with dignity. I mean, this idea of helping people at the end of their life, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross comes to mind. She's in my bookshelves over here. She was, a lot of people think that she was all about grief. She was not. She was all about dying and dying with dignity. So the idea of assisting people has been along for years, right? So we can kind of stop and hold everybody right there. We're not saying anything new. But the death doula, the certification, the teaching, the code of ethics, the parameters, what they do, what they, I wouldn't say what they don't do, because I'm sure we could have a beautiful conversation about that today. When I was doing my research online to get ready to have this beautiful conversation with you, what comes to mind is, you know, education, communication, service, whole, it's whatever they need. So maybe you can share with my audience the difference between a caregiver or a respite giver versus this title, the certification of a death doula, so we can learn.
Sure. That's a great question. So yes, a end-of-life doula or a death doula, we are non-medical. We don't do anything medical. We also don't replace any other personnel. So if hospice is involved, or if the person is at an assisted living facility, our involvement doesn't mean that a social worker is not needed, or a CNA is not needed, or anything like that. We are just simply an added member of the team. And something that you mentioned about end-of-life doulas, I think truly have been around as long as people have been dying. So if you look, you know, I was thinking today, you look back at the old Western movies, On the Prairie type of deal, there's usually a scene where a grandma or grandpa is in the bed, and everybody around is crying, and the doctor comes in and says they've got some kind of, you know, fever, and there's nothing more that can be done. There's always someone in the room that is attending to their needs, with the cold cloth on their forehead, maybe reading from scripture, while the family is saying goodbye. This is what an end-of-life doula does. We help to facilitate comfort for the person and to bring the family into acceptance and saying their goodbyes, any unfinished business, that sort of thing. So you mentioned hospice. Yes, the hospice movement, I believe, started in the 60s. And then in the 70s and 80s, we had birth doulas become a big thing.
Yes.
I believe. Yes. I believe in like 1998 or so, there was a birth doula who attended a seminar about end of life, and that led to her creating the first program for end of life doulas at a hospice in New York City in the early 2000s.
That makes much sense.
Yeah. So there was always people doing this, but there was no real organized way for them to get together. They didn't necessarily know about one another. They didn't have an actual title. And then Care Doula School of Accompanying the Dying actually has the distinction of being the first program in the United States to train and certify end-of-life doulas. And that was started by Deanna Cochran in 2010.
Okay.
And I think that since that, certainly there are many, many programs available now worldwide to train doulas.
So you've been doing this since the pandemic. You used the time that you had, the downtime, we'll call it, which the world was down, right? So good for you for using it better than I did. But I guess what I'm thinking is it's been 2 years. We're kind of coming out. And of course, there was so much death around that time too. Take us through today. This thing that you're doing and this gift that you're in service to others for, do you get called all the time? Is it something that's just starting new for you? Can you take us through a little bit about the experience? I know you're not going to share anything that you're anyone you're working with, but just some of maybe the around it. So people who are thinking right now, oh my gosh, I could use some help. This sounds like something I could use. We could educate them that way. That would be great.
Sure. So mostly what I do right now, I volunteer for hospice. But end-of-life doulas, a simple way of putting it is to accompany the dying on their journey. We provide, as I mentioned, non-medical and holistic support. And it's not just people who are terminally ill. You can also be critically ill without a terminal illness and still benefit from an end-of-life doula. We serve as companions, listeners, witnesses, and advocates. As you mentioned, we educate, we guide, we provide emotional support. And we can do practical things too, like advanced directives and life review, respite, bereavement support. So we can be hired either by someone who's critically ill, someone who's dying, or maybe it's a family member that needs support. We can be a great support to family members too. As I mentioned, with like respite or helping them to come into acceptance.
I love it. You said a word that triggered me real quick that I just want to go back to because it's part of the work that I do that I love helping with for people. And that is, you said the word life review. So when I set this up a little bit, that my father-in-law came to me after he lost his wife of 65 years. And I said, do you want to just talk about your grief a little bit, which is all part of this process, right? Someone who's going through the loss of their wife or their husband. And we just started talking about grief. And then it was like, you know, are you prepared? Because, you know, I know his wife was, they had everything written out and directives and the rest of it. I said, but are you prepared? And so we started talking more about that. Well, one conversation led to another. We ended up doing a whole interview together for his family on how he wanted to be remembered, why his life was so important, the things that he felt he accomplished, the things that he wished he'd done more of. I mean, he did this beautiful on-camera interview and asked me to show it to his family at his funeral. So they didn't know we were working behind the scenes to do this, but in a sense, it was his life in review. So when you mentioned that, is it similar to that? Do you help them kind of write things down or journal things or to take me to that aspect of your work, Judy?
Well, honestly, when I first go in to meet a patient or a client that I've been given, I will first introduce myself as an end-of-life doula with hospice, and then I will ask them where they see themselves in 6 months. And I do that for a couple of reasons. One, if they tell me, well, I'm going to be out of here and I'm going to be back skiing in Colorado, then I know they haven't quite, they're not at the point of accepting that they're dying or that they're terminal. And that's okay because we meet people wherever they are in their journey. But it gives me, a framework, a place to start. So then I might respond with, great, what can I do to help you get
Got it.
there? You know,
Got
we'll
it.
start with that. If they look at me like I'm crazy and they say, where am I going to be in 6 months? I may not even be here next week. I'm dying, lady. Then it's like, wonderful. And I've had that happen. Wonderful. The elephant's out of the room. Let's talk about it. How do you feel
Got it.
about it? Do you have any unfinished business I can help you with? Have you told your family what you would like done with your body afterwards? Who do you want to be there when you die, holding your hand? Certain music you'd like to hear, scripture perhaps. There's a whole sort of things. In fact, when I first started with this program, I remember thinking that I'm a great organizer and I like checking things off of a list. So I'm thinking I'm going to go into a client's home and I'm going to have a little clipboard with a list of things to accomplish. And I'm going to say, oh, you're dying, but first we have to get through this list. And it was surprising to me to find out that we don't do that at all. We don't go in with any kind of an agenda. We simply, one of the biggest things that we do is just simply be there. Hold space, as you've heard, good listener. And then we certainly can help people cross things off of a list, but it's at their speed, so to speak.
Oh, I love that. What about the, I know this is the family dynamic sometimes can be a lot, right? Because people like you mentioned the person's accepting or where they fall on the acceptance scale, right? Then you got the family all mixed in. And how much of this is helping the family and how much of this is helping the person? Is it split down the middle or is it just depend on the case?
It would kind of depend on if you were being hired, for instance, it would depend on who was hiring you. Although the patient is pretty much the first priority. If the patient, perhaps let's say you have an Alzheimer's patient and the family is hiring you, well, then you're not going to talk to the patient about their impending death. You're going to be there to support the family with making sure that they have things lined up the way that they would like the passing to go. Again, what was your mother's favorite music? Is she spiritual? Would you like to do any kind of a ritual when the time comes? That sort of thing.
Yeah.
A lot of people think when you talk about planning for death and dying that you're talking about getting your will in order and your advance directives. And yes, while that is all part of it, bigger part of it, and you mentioned this earlier, doulas really want people to talk about death and dying long before they're ever even ill.
Got it.
So if we can get people to bring it up around the dinner table, it can be awkward at first. I know I've brought it up with my own daughters since doing this training, and they, first response was, oh, Mom, that's so morbid. I don't want to talk about that. You're going to be here forever. But the more you do it, the easier it becomes. You can joke around about it a little bit and lighten the mood, so to speak. And before you know it, you've expressed to them things that you want and it means a lot. I mean, I know when my own mother passed, I knew some things that she wanted, but like for instance, just having to go home and pick out an outfit out of the closet, I felt like I didn't, am I going to do right by her? What outfit does she want me to put on? And then it
Yes.
wasn't until afterwards I realized I never took shoes. Well, nobody saw that in the casket, but it still kind of weighs on your mind. Like I buried my mother without shoes. And then I thought, well, my mother's feet always swell. So I guess that's
Oh,
why,
too
but
funny.
it would have been nice if
Yes.
I
Yeah.
knew all of the things my mother wanted.
And
It
don't you think?
really makes it so much easier. It's such a loving gift to give to your family and your loved ones to let them know ahead of time things that you want.
I think we're having such a beautiful conversation about that too. I'm thinking about my own parents who went through the loss of their parents and how, you know, the depression. So one of them held on to a lot of stuff and one, you know, and so my parents were all about when they passed and what they wanted and, you know, and they were not going to have, my mother used to make me go over to her house and she'd open up a closet door and say, look, and I'd go, there's nothing in there, Mom. And she'd say, exactly. Look at how cleared my closet. That was something that was really important to her, right? So these are the mm-hmm. things that we can assist and help with. And I know we're making light of that and that's okay too, right? But I would love for you to share your knowledge of here you are working with people. And I'm sure you have beautiful things that you can share with us about your learning of working with people at the end of their life. What are some things that you want others to know to be of service to them so that if they're on the fence and they're thinking, it's like, oh my God, I didn't even think of that. That's something great to think of at the end of their life that you've learned in working with people for the last couple of years. Could you just share some of that with us?
So I think most importantly would be communicating with each other. I know when people are dying a lot, sometimes they want to talk about their fears. They want to talk about the fact that they're dying, or maybe the daughter wants to talk about the fact that her mother is dying and how that feels to her and what she's afraid of, but they don't want to talk to each other because mom doesn't want to burden the kids. The kids certainly don't want to burden mom who's dying because she's got enough on her plate. So that's one of the great places where an end-of-life doula can come in, because we have no qualms about talking about death and dying with people who want to. And we give them the opportunity to say things that they need to say. And along with that is, you know, when mom does express certain things that she might want, if, let's say, for instance, mom's wish was in her final moments as she's dying, she wants everybody to crank up the heavy metal music and have a toast of, you know, Jim Beam or whatever. Yeah. And you've got daughter standing there going, oh, we're not going to do that. That's terrible. You want to try to bring them together and say, but this is what she wants. Yeah. And how can we get there? How can we achieve so that you're happy, but also that we honor what it is your mom is seeking? So I think that that's one of the places where an end-of-life doula can really help is bringing people together to talk about their fears. I hope that I answered your question.
You absolutely did. Great advice for others, right? So when you think of where we are today, kind of in the world, you know, with COVID, just I'm going to say ending because I'm an optimist that it's behind us. But everything that we've learned in going through that, is there anything that has made it, I'm going to say easier? I know that's not the right word, but because it seems to be more of a topic that we're open to having, because I do think our communication and people are a little bit more open to their end of life, and, you know, and we're having these conversations. There's more people like you doing the work. There's respite and hospice and the rest of it, right? It seems a little, I'm going to use the word mainstream, right? How much farther do we have to go, Judy, before we really turn the corner and that this is something as beautiful as birth is, that death can be seen the same way? How far do you think we are from that?
Well, we have a little work yet. I think that that is important to end-of-life doulas, to educate the public about what a doula can do for them, but also to, like I said, just get people talking about death and dying. You know, we plan for birthdays, we plan for graduation parties, we plan for weddings. People don't want to plan for their death. And I do think that COVID changed things a bit, because there were so many people that died during that time that family members could not visit them in the hospital. And that really affected people to feel that their loved one was dying alone. So I think that that has people thinking more about their own wishes and what they would like. Yes, with everything available on Zoom, we hear so much more about doulas. There's Facebook groups now for doulas. There's books, there's just, it is becoming a lot more world. Hospice is coming on board. Hospice where I'm at here even has a doula training program. Now, it's not going to be nearly as extensive as something that somebody privately pays for, but I think it's a great program. It's a great way of introducing someone to whether they think they would like to do this work. So volunteering for hospice, maybe taking the vigil training. Vigil training is when you are actually sitting with someone who's actively dying. They'll have a volunteer that they'll do 2-hour or 4-hour shifts so that that person's not alone. So vigil training and the end-of-life doula training through the hospice can really give someone an idea of whether they're cut out to do this work, because I have learned that not everybody is. In fact, one of the patients that I worked with, the first patient to die, I did a legacy project with her, similar to what you mentioned. She wanted to tell her story. Yeah. So I would record her while I was typing her story. And then I would go home and listen to it and fix all my mistakes and go back the next week with what I had typed. And after 3 or 4 weeks of this, you know, she announced that she was happy with her story. She was done and she was ready to die. And I said, well, I'll be back next Tuesday. We'll maybe go through family photos. We'll find something else to do. And before I could go back, I got the call from my coordinator that she had passed. And I remember my coordinator saying to me, are you okay? Do you need to talk to someone?
Yeah.
And it was like, I don't know, am I okay? Should I be okay? Am I, you know, like, how am I supposed to react? And then I thought, yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, no, I don't need to talk to anybody because I'm happy for her. Yes. She was ready to go. She had accomplished what she wanted to. And I'm happy for her to no longer be in pain and at peace. But I do know, I have heard other doulas mention things in Zoom meetings and whatnot about they get a little too attached. So you have to be able to compartmentalize. You need to be compassionate, of course, but you also need to be able to look at it from, I guess, like I said, the standpoint of that person is at peace now. And if you get yourself all worked up and you're crying like it's a family member, then that might not be the best situation. So I'm back to the training with hospice, vigil training, end of life dual training, great way to find out if this is something you meant to do.
Thank you so much for saying both the things you just said. So I want to go back and make sure that the audience heard them. First off, the question about COVID and I said, what changed it? I mean, I knew there was a change because of it, because everything's changed because of COVID. And I had forgotten how many people were unable to see their loved ones because of COVID, and they passed, you know, and we were having funerals over Zoom because you not only could you not go and see your loved ones, but you couldn't be in a room with other people and grieve. So that's a whole separation that this caused. So thank you for acknowledging that and making that point of why this work is so important, and it's become more important because people are realizing that you just don't know, especially with what's been going on. So thank you for that. And then the other piece, which was a great lead into another question I was going to ask, is this for everybody? And how do you keep the balance and the difference between getting so attached? And because if you care, right, compassion is a caring energy. How does it not tip over? And then next thing you know, you're just going from one loss to the other, and you're not doing service to the person that you're trying to serve, right? So I think you mentioned both of those and answered those perfectly. And I just wanted to acknowledge both of them. So thank you so much. What other questions? Have I forgotten anything that when you knew today that we were going to talk, you know, and you wanted to say, oh, geez, I hope she asked this question because I really want to make sure this message gets out there. Is there anything, Judy, that you want to make sure people know about this beautiful modality so we can educate others?
Just that I really think that anybody who is experiencing any kind of an illness or a terminal situation should maybe reach out and meet with a doula, talk with them, find out if it's for you. A lot of doulas, we offer other modalities as part of our, we call it a doula tool bag. So for instance, I'm a licensed massage therapist. I'm certified level Reiki 2. and a certified sound healer, and I'm currently learning to become a certified crystal healer. So these are just examples of other ways that we can be of service, not only to the person who's ill, but to their family members. I mean, imagine a caregiver dealing with stress, and how great would a chair massage be? So, you know, just I would just really encourage people. My biggest takeaways are: talk about death and dying and your wishes with your family. Make it a dinner conversation, talk about it frequently. And then if you are a person that's in a position that's ill or dying, reach out to an end of life doula, see if it's for you.
I love it. And because my channel is a spiritual channel, I can go down just the road of spirituality for a second, because that's why you're on as an interview. You mentioned all the things, the sound healing, the massage, the crystals and stuff. So it sounds like you have a beautiful arm. And I just wanted to make sure I put the separation in there that typically if you're getting certified for death doula, it's not in this realm of crystal healings and I didn't want to confuse the two, so I was trying to keep them separate. But because my channel is all about the spiritual side, I wanted to make sure that this gets mentioned too. And your arm, because I know there's so many people in Venice that could use your work. How does somebody go about connecting with you, working with you? And if I had a referral for you, take us through. Normally, Jean, I get the call. I meet with them. Take me through that so I can educate the people I know.
Well, I would say just to reach out to me through either Facebook Messenger or okay. They can call me on my phone. Okay. I do not have a website at this time. I recently have formed or in the process of forming a collective with some other local doulas.
Okay.
And we created a brochure that we're taking around the community to inform people about what end of life doulas are. We're looking for speaking opportunities. We're partnering with other like-minded businesses like senior services, estate attorneys, that sort of thing, to produce like lunch and learns to inform the public. So if anybody out there wants to have us speak at maybe your clubhouse where you live or your facility, we would love to do that.
Perfect. And as far as a consultation with somebody, do you talk with them over the phone to see if it's, you know, close, convenient, what if their needs are what, you know, is something you could do or you're available, I should say. Is that
yes,
just a
absolutely.
Consultation over the phone first and then you actually...
It can be. I can also meet with somebody. I would meet with somebody probably in person if they would be all right with that. For it's probably only an hour meeting and it would be free, the first consult, to let them know, find out, like I said, where they are with their acceptance, where they are emotionally and physically, and then explain to them ways that I can help. Another thing is, you know, we can be hired by a family who live out of state because they can't be here for their loved one. And how worried are they about mom who's here and they're trying out there in New York or Michigan or wherever trying to organize things? A doula is a great person to be an advocate for them and help with that. So sure, we can do phone consults too.
I love that. I will tell you, in working with people through the mediumship side, so now I'm getting really woo-woo on you, the number one conversation that happens in my office with spirit is about what you're talking about, their end of their life. Thank you for holding my hand. Thank you for, you know, those little things that we're able to do to bring them comfort. And they're never agitated on the other side and want to talk about what didn't get done, right? It's always about what you're saying. So the more of that we're doing, the better for them, the better for family. So I just love our conversation today. I love sharing what you do. So excited to teach people more about this beautiful modality that I said in the intro will affect everybody at some point, right? So you cannot run from this. So it's better to be as prepared as you can be and not to be afraid of it. I think the Buddhists understood this better than anybody, right? So the last question is the spiritual side. You know, how do you go in? And I guess, you know, I'm thinking about whoever the person is. Whenever I'm working with somebody, I try to say things like, you know, what do you believe? And, you know, how can I support you? And what is, you know, what is your understanding? And I try to leave it not my beliefs, right? Because I just want to support exactly where they are, especially with grief in a concept that we're talking about. So how do you find your way in? Give me an example of how you would maybe go in and even suggest a sound healing to somebody who, you know, can you take me there? How do you open up the door for the spiritual side?
Well, it would be part of some of the first questions that I would ask is if they have any spiritual or religious beliefs. And if it's something that I'm not familiar with, I would ask them to maybe explain things to me, or do they have something that I could read, or just do some research on my own to educate myself so that I can honor, because as you mentioned, it's not my beliefs, it's their beliefs. And absolutely, I want to honor that person. I'm not there to save anybody or convert anybody or anything like that. If they just tell me that they're just spiritual, I may mention crystals. I have brought crystals into it a couple of times, and gave someone a bracelet because it was amethyst and it can help to reduce anxiety and fear. And she was very grateful. And when I would visit with her, she always had it on. So, you know, just asking and conversation.
Love that. Love that. Oh, I so enjoyed today. I think we're ready to slide into, you know what's coming up next?
Rapid fire.
The music just started. This is where I get to put you on the spot for one word answers. Are you ready to play a little game with me?
Okay, one word's going to be hard.
I know, it always is, but I can do editing, so don't worry about it. Okay, so the rapid fire questions today. What is your favorite movie?
Fried Green Tomatoes.
Oh, great choice. If you were going to change the world today, the world needs what in order to be changed?
Compassion.
Agreed. We all have pet peeves, things that just kind of drive us a little nuts, maybe about people or maybe about situations. What's a pet peeve of yours?
Selfishness.
We'll just pause on that. Selfishness. Agreed. And then we all have these beautiful personal qualities about us that we love. We're not great about touting about them, but here's your chance. What's something you love about yourself, Judy?
I love that I'm always learning and changing and evolving.
Great answers. And then the last question before we say goodbye and thank you to everyone is, what are you doing when you're experiencing joy?
It sounds hokey, but honestly, when I'm helping people, I believe that I was put on this earth to be a helper.
Judy, thank you so much for your gift of your time today and sharing your knowledge of Death Doula and educating my audience. We so appreciate everybody watching today. Thank you, and thank the audience for being here. We will catch you next video. Bye, everyone.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Hey, welcome back to my channel, Jeannie Lynch. So happy that you're here today and so honored to be talking about my next topic and bringing on my next guest for this interview. Today, we're going to be interviewing a death doula. Okay, so I've already lost your attention. You're ready to click out because this is too grim of a topic for you, or maybe you're like me years ago and you're terrified of death and you just can't go there as a topic. Well, I encourage you to absolutely stay listening because that's not what we're talking about today. When you hear the word doula, birth doula, right? Immediately, I'm sure you think of a beautiful baby coming in, and a birth doula is somebody who helps the mother transition that beautiful child into the physical, right? Isn't that beautiful? Education, communication, helping that and assisting that person, whatever they need. Well, guess what? A death doula does the same thing, but helping the person transition out. And don't just think that it's all about the person who's transitioning. It's absolutely about everybody in the room too, the family, the loved ones, the nurses, everybody, right? Because we're all going through that transition together when the baby comes in or when the person goes out, regardless of age, right? So today we're going to be talking about that, and we're going to be learning all about when is the right time? What do they actually do? How do they assist people? Why is it so important? When is it so important, right? And I can't wait to explore this topic with you. So as somebody who helps people through grief, this is a topic that is near and dear to me. So I invited this person in to share her knowledge, and I'm going to share that with you. So stay listening, stay watching. That beautiful interview is coming up next. Hey, welcome everybody. So excited for my guest. I just did a beautiful little intro for you explaining what today's layup is. And I'm so excited for our topic. And you know, when you reached out to me and you said this is something that is passionate to you, I thought I had met a kindred soul. And then on the phone, we started to find out that we had more in common than we did not, right? So today we'll share with the audience some of those beautiful connections that we have as souls. So today, as you know, I was really focused on sharing your beautiful modality. I'm going to call it a spiritual modality because it fits so nicely in a playlist I have. But I don't want people thinking that it's all about the end of the life from the spiritual standpoint. We're talking about a death doula, and we're talking about assisting people at the end of their life as they transition. And that can mean so many things to different people. So for you, what I would love to do for my audience is share everything about you, who you are, how you got into this, and a little bit about the door opening for others who might not know this word. In fact, they're afraid of this word, death doula. So, Judy, I'll let you give your full name and tell us how you came to be and where you are.
Okay, well, thank you for having me. And yes, my name is Judy Bram. I live in Venice, Florida with my husband, Mike, and our two cats, Monkey and Mugsy. We have two beautiful and accomplished adult daughters. I have two adorable granddaughters. I work part-time in a crystal store, and I am an end-of-life doula, as you mentioned.
Okay. We did look for your crystal store the other day, so I do know it's on 41, and I was excited to go check that out. So that's always good to know for my Florida peeps. We'll put that tag in here and talk more about that. So yay. So the death doula, you know, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Were you doing crystals and then got into this, or did something happen in your life that opened up the door to this beautiful work?
Well, I will tell you that I believe I was a end of life doula before I even knew what one was. Back in 2006, I was present with my mother when she died. I was holding her hand. And then in 2013, I was present when my youngest daughter's father died while on hospice at home. So I have been there as both the person who was losing their loved one and the person supporting someone who was losing a loved one. And when I would tell people about this afterwards, and when I would talk about it, I would always say what an honor it was to be there for someone in their final moments. And I would get a lot of strange looks. I would have people actually like shudder, put their hands up and say things like, I don't know how you could do that. And I started to feel like I was weird, like maybe there was something wrong with the way that I was viewing it. So fast forward to the pandemic, and during the time at home with not much to do, I saw an article online that said that Elvis Presley's granddaughter had become a death doula. So that was like clickbait for me, because I thought, what in the world is a death doula? That sounds really creepy, and I had never heard of it. So I clicked on the article and read about it, and it was just this epiphany that this is something I've done, this is something I'm supposed to be doing. And so I started researching, and thanks to the pandemic, everything was available online. You used to have to travel to wherever the trainings were, whether it was California or Texas, and now training was available on Zoom. So I found a program and I completed it in 6 months, and that was about 2 years ago.
So let's go to that, because there's so much in what you just said, and I'm sure my audience has the same questions that are coming to my mind. I think of so many people assisting people as they cross over, right? And years ago when hospice, right? You can, is it time for hospice? And then the hospice respite houses started to pop up in these beautiful areas, the right to die with dignity. I mean, this idea of helping people at the end of their life, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross comes to mind. She's in my bookshelves over here. She was, a lot of people think that she was all about grief. She was not. She was all about dying and dying with dignity. So the idea of assisting people has been along for years, right? So we can kind of stop and hold everybody right there. We're not saying anything new. But the death doula, the certification, the teaching, the code of ethics, the parameters, what they do, what they, I wouldn't say what they don't do, because I'm sure we could have a beautiful conversation about that today. When I was doing my research online to get ready to have this beautiful conversation with you, what comes to mind is, you know, education, communication, service, whole, it's whatever they need. So maybe you can share with my audience the difference between a caregiver or a respite giver versus this title, the certification of a death doula, so we can learn.
Sure, sure. That's a great question. So yes, a end-of-life doula or a death doula, we are non-medical. We don't do anything medical. We also don't replace any other personnel. So if hospice is involved or if the person is at an assisted living facility, our involvement doesn't mean that a social worker is not needed or a CNA is not needed or anything like that. We are just simply an added member of the team. And something that you mentioned about end-of-life doulas, I think truly have been around as long as people have been dying. So if you look, you know, I was thinking today, you look back at the old Western movies, On the Prairie type of deal, there's usually a scene where a grandma or grandpa is in the bed and everybody around is crying and the doctor comes in and says they've got some kind of, you know, fever and there's nothing more that can be done. There's always someone in the room that is attending to their needs, with a cold cloth on their forehead, maybe reading from scripture, while the family is saying goodbye. This is what an end-of-life doula does. We help to facilitate comfort for the person and to bring the family into acceptance and saying their goodbyes, any unfinished business, that sort of thing. So you mentioned hospice. Yes, the hospice movement, I believe, started in the 60s. And then in the 70s and 80s, we had birth doulas become a big thing.
Yes,
I believe. Yes. I believe in like 1998 or so, there was a birth doula who attended a seminar about end of life, and that led to her creating the first program for end of life doulas at a hospice in New York City in the early 2000s.
That makes much sense.
Yeah. So there was always people doing this, but there was no real organized way for them to get together. They didn't necessarily know about one another. They didn't have an actual title. And then Care Doula School of Accompanying the Dying actually has the distinction of being the first program in the United States to train and certify end-of-life doulas, and that was started by Deanna Cochran in 2010.
Okay.
And I think that since that, certainly there are many, many programs available now worldwide to train doulas.
So you've been doing this since the pandemic. You used the time that you had, the downtime we'll call it, which the world was down, right? So good for you for using it better than I did. But I guess what I'm thinking is, it's been 2 years, we're kind of coming out, and of course there was so much death around that time too. Take us through today, this thing that you're doing and this gift that you're in service to others for. Do you get called all the time? Is it something that's just starting new for you? Can you take us through a little bit about the experience? I know you're not going to share anything that you're anyone you're working with, but just some of maybe the around it. So people who are thinking right now, oh my gosh, I could use some help. This sounds like something I could use. we could educate them that way, that would be great.
Sure, sure. So mostly what I do right now, I volunteer for hospice. But end-of-life doulas, we simply, a simple way of putting it is to accompany the dying on their journey. We provide, as I mentioned, non-medical and holistic support. And it's not just people who are terminally ill. You can also be critically ill without a terminal illness and still benefit from an end-of-life doula. We serve as companions, listeners, witnesses, and advocates. As you mentioned, we educate, we guide, we provide emotional support. And we can do practical things too, like advanced directives and life review, respite, bereavement support. So we can be hired either by someone who's critically ill, someone who's dying, or maybe it's a family member that needs support. We could be a great support to family members too, as I mentioned, with like respite or helping them to come into acceptance.
I love it. You said a word that triggered me real quick that I just want to go back to because it's part of the work that I do that I love helping with for people. And that is, you said the word life review. So I want to set this up a little bit, that my father-in-law came to me after he lost his wife of 65 years. And I said, do you want to just talk about your grief a little bit, which is all part of this process, right? Someone who's going through the loss of their wife or their husband. And we just started talking about grief. And then it was like, you know, are you prepared? Because, you know, I know his wife was, they had everything written out and directives and the rest of it. I said, but are you prepared? And so we started talking more about that. Well, one conversation led to another. We ended up doing a whole interview together for his family on how he wanted to be remembered, why his life was so important, the things that he felt he accomplished, the things that he wished he'd done more of. I mean, he did this beautiful on-camera interview and asked me to show it to his family at his funeral. So they didn't know we were working behind the scenes to do this, but in a sense, it was his life in review. So when you mentioned that, is it similar to that? Do you help them kind of write things down or journal things, or to take me to that aspect of your work, Judy?
Well, honestly, when I first go in to meet a patient or a client that I've been given, I will first introduce myself as an end-of-life doula with hospice, and then I will ask them where they see themselves in 6 months. And I do that for a couple of reasons. One, if they tell me, well, I'm going to be out of here and I'm going to be back skiing in Colorado, then I know they haven't quite, they're not at the point of accepting that they're dying or that they're terminal. And that's okay, because we meet people wherever they are in their journey. But it gives me, you know, a framework, a place to start. So then I might respond with, great, what can I do to help you get there? You know, we'll start with that. If they look at me like I'm crazy and they say, where am I going to be in 6 months? I may not be here next week. I'm dying, lady. Then it's like, wonderful. And I've had that happen. Wonderful. The elephant's out of the room. Let's talk about it. How do you feel about it? Do you have any unfinished business I can help you with? Have you told your family what you would like done with your body afterwards? Who do you want to be there when you die, holding your hand? Certain music you'd like to hear, scripture perhaps, there's a whole sort of things. In fact, when I first started with this program, I remember thinking that I'm a great organizer and I like checking things off the list. So I'm thinking I'm going to go into a client's home and I'm going to have a little clipboard with a list of things to accomplish. And I'm going to say, oh, you're dying, but first we have to get through this list. And it was surprising to me to find out that we don't do that at all. We don't go in with any kind of an agenda. We simply, one of the biggest things that we do is just simply be there. Hold space, as you've heard, good listener. And then we certainly can help people cross things off of a list, but it's at their speed, so to speak.
Oh, I love that. What about the, I know this is, the family dynamic sometimes can be a lot, right? Because people, like you mentioned, the person's accepting or where they fall on the acceptance scale, right? Then you got the family all mixed in. And how much of this is helping the family, and how much of this is helping the person? Is it split down the middle, or is it just depend on the case?
It would kind of depend on if you were being hired, for instance. It would depend on who was hiring you. Although the patient is pretty much the first priority. If the patient, perhaps let's say you have an Alzheimer's patient and the family is hiring you, well, then you're not going to talk to the patient about their impending death. You're going to be there to support the family with making sure that they have things lined up the way that they would like the passing to go. Again, you know, what was your mother's favorite music? Is she spiritual? You know, would you like to do any kind of a ritual when the time comes? That sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people think when you talk about planning for death and dying that you're talking about getting your will in order and your advance directives. And yes, while that is all part of it, bigger part of it, and you mentioned this earlier, doulas really want people to talk about death and dying long before they're ever even ill. So if we can get people to bring it up around the dinner table, it can be awkward at first. I know I've brought it up with my own daughters since doing this training, and they, you know, first response was, "Mom, you know, that's so morbid. I don't want to talk about that. You're going to be here forever." But the more you do it, the easier it becomes. You can joke around about it a little bit and lighten the mood, so to speak. And before you know it, you've expressed to them things that you want, and you know, it means a lot. I mean, I know when my own mother passed, I knew some things that she wanted, but like, for instance, just having to go home and pick out an outfit out of the closet, I felt like, I didn't, you know, am I going to do right by her? What outfit does she want me to put on?
Yes.
And then it wasn't until afterwards I realized I never took shoes. Well, nobody saw that in the casket, but it still kind of weighs on your mind. Like, I buried my mother without shoes. And then I thought, well, my mother's feet always swell, so I guess that's why.
Too funny.
But it would have been nice if I knew all of the things my mother wanted.
And
it really makes it so much easier. It's such a loving gift to give to your family and your loved ones to let them know ahead of time things that you want.
I think we're having such a beautiful conversation about that too. I'm thinking about my own parents who went through the loss of their parents and how, you know, the depression. So one of them held on to a lot of stuff and one, you know, and so my parents were all about when they passed and what they wanted and, you know, and they were not going to have, my mother used to make me go over to her house and she'd open up a closet door and say, "Look," and I'd go, "There's nothing in there, Mom." And she'd say, "Exactly. Look at how cleared my closet." That was something that was really important to her, right? So these are the things that we can assist and help with. And I know we're making light of that, and that's okay too, right? But I would love for you to share your knowledge of, here you are working with people, and I'm sure you have beautiful things that you can share with us about your learning of working with people at the end of their life. What are some things that you want others to know to be of service to them, so that if they're on the fence and they're thinking, it's like, "Oh my God, I didn't even think of that." That's something great to think of at the end of their life that you've learned in working with people for the last couple of years. Could you just share some of that with us?
So I think most importantly would be communicating with each other. I know when people are dying, a lot sometimes they want to talk about their fears. They want to talk about the fact that they're dying, or maybe the daughter wants to talk about the fact that her mother is dying and how that feels to her and what she's afraid of, but they don't want to talk to each other because mom doesn't want to burden the kids. The kids certainly don't want to burden mom who's dying because she's got enough on her plate. So that's one of the great places where an end-of-life doula can come in, because we have no qualms about talking about death and dying with people who want to. And we give them the opportunity to say things that they need to say. And along with that is, you know, when mom does express certain things that she might want, if, let's say, for instance, mom's wish was in her final moments as she's dying, she wants everybody to crank up the heavy metal music and have a toast of, you know, Jim Beam or whatever. Yeah. And you've got daughter standing there going, "Oh, I'm not going to do that. That's terrible." You want to try to bring them together and say, "But this is what she wants. And How can we get there? How can we achieve so that you're happy, but also that we honor what it is your mom is seeking? So I think that that's one of the places where an end-of-life doula can really help is bringing people together to talk about their fears. I hope that I answered your question.
You absolutely did. Great advice for others, right? So when you think of where we are today, kind of in the world, you know, with COVID just, I'm going to say ending because I'm an optimist that it's behind us. But everything that we've learned in going through that, is there anything that has made it, let's say, easier? I know that's not the right word, but because it seems to be more of a topic that we're open to having, because I do think our communication and people are a little bit more open to their end of life, and you know, and we're having these conversations, there's more people like you doing the work, there's respite and hospice and the rest of it, right? It seems a little, I'm going to use the word mainstream, right? How much farther do we have to go, Judy, before we really turn the corner, and that this is something as beautiful as birth is, that death can be seen the same way? How far do you think we are from that?
Well, we have a little work yet. I think that that is important to end-of-life doulas, to educate the public about what a doula can do for them, but also to, like I said, just get people talking about death and dying. You know, we plan for birthdays, we plan for graduation parties, we plan for weddings. People don't want to plan for their death. And I do think that COVID changed things a bit, because there were so many people that died during that time that family members could not visit them in the hospital. And that really affected people to feel that their loved one was dying alone. So I think that that has people thinking more about their own wishes and what they would like. Yes, with the everything available on Zoom, we hear so much more about doulas. There's Facebook groups now for doulas. There's books, there's just, it is becoming a lot more well. Hospice is coming on board. Hospice, where I'm at here, even has a doula training program. Now, it's not going to be nearly as extensive as something that somebody privately pays for, but I think it's a great program. It's a great way of introducing someone to whether they think they would like to do this work. So volunteering for hospice, maybe taking the vigil training. Vigil training is when you are actually sitting with someone who's actively dying. They'll have a volunteer that they'll do 2-hour or 4-hour shifts so that that person's not alone. So vigil training and the end-of-life doula training through the hospice can really give someone an idea of whether they're cut out to do this work, because I have learned that not everybody is. In fact, one of the patients that I worked with, the first patient to die, I did a legacy project with her, similar to what you mentioned. She wanted to tell her story, so I would record her while I was typing her story, and then I would go home and listen to it and fix all my mistakes and go back the next week with what I had typed. And after 3 or 4 weeks of this, you know, she announced that she was happy with her story, she was done, and she was ready to die. And I said, well, I'll be back next Tuesday. We'll maybe go through family photos. We'll find something else to do. And before I could go back, I got the call from my coordinator that she had passed. And I remember my coordinator saying to me, are you okay? Do you need to talk to someone?
Yeah.
And it was like, I don't know. Am I okay? Should I be okay? Am I, you know, like, how am I supposed to react? And then I thought, yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, no, I don't need to talk to anybody, because I'm happy for her. Yes. She was ready to go. She had accomplished what she wanted to, and I'm happy for her to no longer be in pain and at peace. But I do know, I have heard other doulas mention things in Zoom meetings and whatnot about they get a little too attached. So you have to be able to compartmentalize. You need to be compassionate, of course, but you also need to be able to look at it from, I guess, like I said, the standpoint of that person is at peace now. And if you get yourself all worked up and you're crying like it's a family member, then that might not be the best situation. So I'm back to the training with hospice, vigil training, end-of-life dual training, great way to find out if this is something you're meant to do.
Thank you so much for saying both the things you just said. So I want to go back and make sure that the audience heard them. First off, the question about COVID and and I said, what changed it? I mean, I knew there was a change because of it, because everything's changed because of COVID. And I had forgotten how many people were unable to see their loved ones because of COVID, and they passed, you know, and we were having funerals over Zoom because you not only could you not go and see your loved ones, but you couldn't be in a room with other people and grieve. So that's a whole separation that this caused. So thank you for acknowledging that and making that point of why this work is so important, and it's become more important because people are realizing that you just don't know, especially with what's been going on. So thank you for that. And then the other piece, which was a great lead into another question I was going to ask, is this for everybody? And how do you keep the balance and the difference between getting so attached? And because if you care, right, compassion is a caring energy. How does it not tip over? And then next thing you know, you're just going from one loss to the other, and you're not doing service to the person that you're trying to serve, right? So I think you mentioned both of those and answered those perfectly, and I just wanted to acknowledge both of them. So thank you so much. What other questions? Have I forgotten anything that when you knew today that we were going to talk, you know, and you wanted to say, oh, geez, I hope she asked this question because I really want to make sure this message gets out there. Is there anything, Judy, that you want to make sure people know about this beautiful modality so we can educate others?
Just that I really think that anybody who is experiencing any kind of an illness or a terminal situation should maybe reach out and meet with a doula, talk with them, find out if it's for you. A lot of doulas, we offer other modalities as part of our, we call it a doula tool bag. So for instance, I'm a licensed massage therapist. I'm certified level Reiki 2 and a certified sound healer. And I'm currently learning to become a certified crystal healer. So these are just examples of other ways that we can be of service, not only to the person who's ill, but to their family members. I mean, imagine a caregiver dealing with stress, and how great would a chair massage be? So, I would just really encourage people. My biggest takeaways are talk about death and dying and your wishes with your family. Make it a dinner conversation, talk about it frequently. And then if you are a person that's in a position that's ill or dying, reach out to an end-of-life doula. See if it's for you.
I love it. And because my channel is a spiritual channel, I can go down just the road of spirituality for a second, because that's why you're on as an interview. You mentioned all the things, the sound healing, the massage, the crystals and stuff. So it sounds like you have a beautiful arm. And I just wanted to make sure I put the separation in there that typically if you're getting certified for death doula, it's not in this realm of crystal healings. And I didn't want to confuse the two, so I was trying to keep them separate. But because my channel is all about the spiritual side, I wanted to make sure that this gets mentioned too. And your arm, because I know there's so many people in Venice that could use your work. How does somebody go about connecting with you, working with you? And if I had a referral for you, take us through. Normally, Jean, I get the call, I meet with them. Take me through that so I can educate the people I know.
Well, I would say just to reach out to me through either Facebook Messenger, or they can call me on my phone. I do not have a website at this time. I recently have formed collective with some other local doulas. Okay. And we created a brochure that we're taking around the community to inform people about what end-of-life doulas are. We're looking for speaking opportunities. We're partnering with other like-minded businesses like senior services, estate attorneys, that sort of thing, to produce like lunch and learns to inform the public. So if anybody out there wants to have us speak at maybe your clubhouse where you live or your facility, we would love to do that.
Perfect. And as far as a consultation with somebody, do you talk with them over the phone to see if it's, you know, close, convenient, what if their needs are what, you know, is something you could do or you're available, I should say? Is that just a consultation over the phone first and then you actually?
It can be. Mm-hmm. I can also meet with somebody. I would meet with somebody probably in person if they would be all right with that. It's probably only an hour meeting and it would be free, the first consult, to let them know, find out, like I said, where they are with their acceptance, where they are emotionally and physically, and then, you know, explain to them ways that I can help. Another thing is, you know, we can be hired by a family who live out of state because they can't be here for their loved one. And how worried are they about mom who's here and they're trying out there in New York or Michigan or wherever trying to organize things? A doula is a great person to be an advocate for them and help with that. So, sure, we can do phone consults too.
I love that. I will tell you, in working with people through the mediumship side, so now I'm getting really woo-woo on you. The number one conversation that happens in my office with spirit is about what you're talking about, their end of their life. Thank you for holding my hand. Thank you for, you know, those little things that we're able to do to bring them comfort. And they're never agitated on the other side and want to talk about what didn't get done, right? It's always about what you're saying. So the more of that we're doing, the better for them, the better for family. So I just love our conversation today. I love sharing what you do. So excited to teach people more about this beautiful modality that I said in the intro will affect everybody at some point, right? So you cannot run from this. So it's better to be as prepared as you can be and not to be afraid of it. I think the Buddhists understood this better than anybody, right? So the last question is the spiritual side, you know, how do you go in? And I guess, you know, I'm thinking about whoever the person is, whenever I'm working with somebody, I try to say things like, you know, what do you believe? And, you know, how can I support you? And what is your understanding? And I try to leave it not my beliefs, right? Because I just want to support exactly where they are, especially with grief and a concept that we're talking about. So how do you find your way in? Give me an example of how you would maybe go in and even suggest a sound healing to somebody who, you know, can you take me there? How do you open up the door for the spiritual side?
Well, it would be part of some of the first questions that I would ask is if they have any spiritual or religious beliefs. And if it's something that I'm not familiar with, I would ask them to maybe explain things to me, or do they have something that I could read, or just do some research on my own to educate myself so that I can honor, because as you mentioned, it's not my beliefs, it's their beliefs, and I want to honor that person. I'm not there to save anybody or convert anybody or anything like that. If they just tell me that they're just spiritual, I may mention crystals. I have brought crystals into it a couple of times, and gave someone a bracelet because it was amethyst and it can help to reduce anxiety and fear. And she was very grateful. And when I would visit with her, she always had it on. So, you know, just asking and conversation.
Love that. Oh, I so enjoyed today. I think we're ready to slide into, you know what's coming up next?
Rapid fire.
The music just started. This is where I get to put you on the spot for one word answers. Are you ready to play a little game with me?
Okay, one word's going to be hard.
I know, it always is, but I can do editing, so don't worry about it. Okay, so the rapid fire questions today. What is your favorite movie?
Fried Green Tomatoes.
Oh, great choice. If you were going to change the world today, the world needs what in order to be changed?
Compassion.
Agreed. We all have pet peeves, things that just kind of drive us a little nuts, maybe about people or maybe about situations. What's a pet peeve of yours?
Selfishness.
We'll just pause on that. Selfishness. Agreed. And then we all have these beautiful personal qualities about us that we love. We're not great about touting about them, but here's your chance. What's something you love about yourself, Judy?
I love that I'm always learning and changing and evolving.
Great answers. And then the last question before we say goodbye and thank you to everyone is, what are you doing when you're experiencing joy?
It sounds hokey, but honestly, when I'm helping people, I believe that I was put on this earth to be a helper.
Judy, thank you so much for your gift of your time today and sharing your knowledge of Death Doula and educating my audience. We so appreciate everybody watching today. Thank you, and thank the audience for being here. We will catch you next video. Bye, everyone.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you.